Okay, so imagine you're like at the starting line of a marathon. You know, months of training behind you, adrenaline pumping, and suddenly the organizers are like, "Hey, we're changing the route," just minutes before the starting gun.
Oh, wow.
Chaos, right? Feels a
Yeah.
bit unfair too. It's kind of like the situation that unfolded in Arizona leading up to the 2006 elections, and it landed a case, Purcell v. Gonzalez, right on the Supreme Court's doorstep.
And this case isn't just about voter ID laws in Arizona. It's become like a cornerstone of election law nationwide.
Yeah.
What's so fascinating is how Purcell highlights the tension between making sure elections run smoothly and the potential for last-minute changes to disenfranchise voters.
Right.
It's a tough balancing act that courts are still grappling with today.
And as you dive deeper into this case, you find it's full of twists and turns, a tight timeline, you know, conflicting court decisions, and even a bit of mystery surrounding one of the rulings.
Oh, yeah.
Ready to unpack it all.
Absolutely. Let's rewind to 2004. Arizona voters passed Proposition 200, requiring proof of citizenship to register to vote and ID to vote. Immediately, this sparks a huge debate. Is it about preventing fraud, or is it voter suppression in disguise?
So we've got this controversial law. Passions are running high. And then what happens? Does it just go into effect?
Not so fast. A lawsuit challenging the law is filed in May 2006, and it's a race against the clock with the November election looming.
Oh, wow.
The district court denies a preliminary injunction, meaning the law would stay in effect for the time being.
Hold on. Preliminary injunction.
Yeah.
For those of us who need a refresher, what does that mean, like in this context?
It's basically a temporary order from a court, often issued early in a case, to prevent something from happening while the bigger legal issues are being sorted out.
Okay.
In this case, the plaintiffs were asking the court to essentially hit pause on the voter ID law while they argued it was unconstitutional.
Got it. So kind of time out while the legal battle plays out.
Right.
But did the district court explain like why they denied the injunction?
And here's where things get a little murky. The district court didn't provide a detailed explanation for their decision, which, spoiler alert, becomes a pretty big deal later on.
Okay, intrigue already. So what did the challengers to the law do next? Accept defeat.
Not a chance. They appeal the district court's decision to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And remember, all this is unfolding with the November election just weeks away.
Yeah, talk about pressure. I bet the folks running the election were sweating bullets trying to figure out what the rules actually were.
Exactly. And then in October 2006, the Ninth Circuit drops a bombshell.
Uh-oh.
They issue an injunction blocking Proposition 200, seemingly out of the blue, with very little explanation as to why they reversed
Wait,
course.
seriously. They just said, nope, no voter ID law without really justifying it. That seems unsatisfying to say the least.
You can say that again. It created this massive what just happened moment for everyone involved. Imagine trying to run an election with the rules constantly changing like that. Talk about a logistical nightmare.
Total chaos.
Ah.
I can see why Arizona officials weren't too happy about this sudden turn of
No,
events.
they definitely weren't. They appealed this decision straight to the Supreme Court, and the court acted swiftly, vacating the Ninth Circuit's injunction, meaning the law was back on for the 2006 election.
Wow, a legal roller coaster. So what was the Supreme Court's reasoning for intervening like this? Did they
Yeah.
think the voter ID law was a good idea?
Actually, the Supreme Court's decision wasn't about the merits of the law itself. They issued what's called a per curiam opinion.
Okay, legal jargon alert. For those of us who aren't constitutional law scholars, what exactly does per curiam mean?
It essentially means it's a decision from the court as a whole rather than being attributed to a specific justice. Think of it as the court speaking with one voice.
Okay.
And in this per curiam opinion, they didn't weigh in on whether voter ID laws were good or bad policy. They focused on when courts should step in and potentially disrupt an election process.
Interesting. So it's less about the substance of the law and more about the process and the timing of the legal challenge.
That's exactly right. The Supreme Court essentially criticized the Ninth Circuit for two main reasons.
Okay.
First, they took issue with Ninth Circuit's lack of clear reasoning for blocking the law. Remember, they kind of just said no to the voter ID law without a robust explanation.
Right.
The Supreme Court saw this as a problem, emphasizing the need for transparency and justification in judicial decisions.
Makes sense. Courts can't just throw out laws willy-nilly. They need to explain their reasoning, especially when it comes to something as fundamental as voting rights.
Exactly. And the second problem the Supreme Court had was with the Ninth Circuit not showing proper deference to the district court's initial decision.
Okay.
Remember, the district court had said the law could stay in effect, and the Ninth Circuit overturned that without a solid justification.
So it's kind of like the Supreme Court was saying, hey, lower courts show some respect for each other's rulings, especially when we're dealing with something as time-sensitive as an election. It's like a legal chain of command.
That's a great analogy. And from all of this, the Purcell principle was born. Basically, it says that courts should be extremely cautious about changing election rules close to an election, as it could cause voter confusion and disrupt the process.
Right.
Think back to that marathon analogy. Imagine the chaos if the route changed right before the starting gun.
Right. It throws everyone off, potentially affecting the outcome of the race.
Yeah.
It sounds like the Supreme Court was trying to prevent that kind of upheaval in the context of elections.
Exactly. They were worried about the real-world consequences of last-minute changes, particularly for voters who might be confused by shifting requirements.
And you're telling me this one case from 2006 about a voter ID law in Arizona has had this lasting impact on election law nationwide.
Oh, absolutely. But there's another interesting wrinkle to this story. Justice Stevens's concurrence.
Concurrence. Meaning he agreed with the outcome, but had some additional thoughts.
You got it, Justice Stevens. While agreeing with the majority that the Ninth Circuit's injunction should be vacated, actually thought that letting the election go ahead under the new voter ID law might be a good thing in the long run.
Interesting. He was basically saying, let's see this law play out in practice and then assess its impact. Kind of like a real-world experiment.
Precisely. He wanted to see the real-world effects, potentially gather data on voter disenfranchisement, and assess whether the law actually prevented the kind of fraud it was designed to address. He saw it as an opportunity to gather evidence before making any sweeping judgments about the law's merits.
That's a fascinating perspective. So you have the majority emphasizing caution, avoiding last-minute disruptions, and then Justice Stevens suggesting a more pragmatic approach. Let's see what happens.
And that tension between preserving order and allowing for a degree of experimentation continues to reverberate in election law to this day.
This is getting complex. So we've got this voter ID law in Arizona, a back and forth legal battle, and then the Supreme Court steps in, not to decide if the law is good or bad, but to establish this Purcell principle about avoiding late stage changes. But how did Purcell actually reshape the legal landscape? We'll dive into that next, right?
Absolutely. Purcell has become this major force in election law, often used to uphold existing rules, even when there are concerns about their fairness. And that raises a whole host of questions about the balance between stability and access in our elections. Stay tuned.
Okay, so we've established that Purcell v. Gonzalez, you know, gave birth to this Purcell principle, which essentially says courts should be wary of rocking the election boat too close to election day. But I have a feeling it's not just about voter ID laws anymore, right?
You're absolutely right. Purcell's reach has extended far beyond those initial voter ID battles in Arizona. It's been cited in cases dealing with all sorts of election procedures, absentee ballot deadlines, voter registration rules, even the location of polling places.
Wow. So it's really become this all-purpose tool for upholding the status quo in elections, even when there are concerns about how those rules are actually working.
That's one way to put it. And it sparked a pretty heated debate about whether Purcell is ultimately helping or hurting our democracy. Is it ensuring stability at the cost of fairness? It's a tough question.
It definitely is. Can you give us like a concrete example of how Purcell has played out in a real-world case beyond that initial voter ID battle?
Absolutely. One that comes to mind is Republican National Committee v. Democratic National Committee, which went before the Supreme Court in 2020. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That was all over the news. Wasn't it about absentee ballots in Wisconsin?
That's right. The case centered around a dispute over the deadline for those absentee ballots. Yeah. The Democratic National Committee wanted to extend the deadline because of the COVID-19 pandemic, arguing that it was essential to protect voters' health and ensure access during a very unusual election.
That makes sense. The pandemic definitely threw a wrench into everything, especially voting.
Exactly. But the Republican National Committee pushed back, arguing that changing the deadline so close to the election would violate the Purcell principle and create chaos and confusion. They basically said, we've got established rules, we need to stick to them no matter what.
So even in the midst of a global pandemic with all the challenges to voting that came with it, the Purcell principle still held sway.
It did. The Supreme Court sided with the Republicans and blocked the deadline extension, citing Purcell as a key reason for their decision. They basically said that even in extraordinary circumstances, altering election rules at the 11th hour poses too great a risk to the integrity and smooth functioning of the election.
Wow, that's a pretty powerful example of how Purcell can impact even the most high-stakes election disputes.
Yeah.
It really highlights that tension we were talking about, stability versus access.
Absolutely. And it underscores the point that Purcell is not just some abstract legal concept. It has real-world consequences, potentially determining who gets to vote, how easily they can cast their ballot. It's a potent legal tool that can be wielded in a variety of ways, and its application is often highly controversial.
No kidding. So if we step back from these specific cases, what does Purcell tell us about the broader landscape of election law in the U.S.?
I think Purcell really reflects this ongoing struggle in our democracy to balance competing values, the right to vote, which is obviously fundamental, and the desire for stability and order in our elections.
Right. And it seems like those values can sometimes be at odds with each other. Do we prioritize making sure every eligible voter can cast a ballot, even if it means changing rules close to an election? Or do we prioritize predictability and avoid any last-minute disruptions, even if it means some voters might face obstacles?
That's the million-dollar question. And Purcell, whether intentionally or not, has tilted the scales in favor of stability. It's created this legal environment where courts are very reluctant to change election rules in the lead-up to an election, even if there are legitimate concerns about fairness or potential disenfranchisement.
So, in a way, Purcell's a product of its time, reflecting a particular set of anxieties about election integrity and the potential for chaos. But as we move forward, especially in a world where voting rights are facing so many challenges, we need to be very careful about how we apply this principle.
I agree. We can't let a well-intentioned concern for order become a shield for potentially discriminatory or suppressive practices. We need to find ways to ensure that the quest for stability doesn't come at the cost of genuine voter access and participation.
Exactly. And as we wrap up this part of our deep dive into Purcell v. Gonzalez, I think it's important for our listeners, especially those aspiring lawyers out there, to grasp that this isn't just some theoretical legal debate happening in a vacuum. This case and the principles it established have very real consequences for people's lives. They shape whether individuals can register and vote easily, whether their vote will actually count, and ultimately whether they have a voice in shaping our democracy.
You put it perfectly. This is about the very essence of citizenship in a democracy. And understanding Purcell is crucial for anyone who wants to engage in debates about voting rights, election integrity, and the future of our democratic institutions.
And on that note, I think it's time to move on to our final segment, where we'll explore some key takeaways for those of you interested in pursuing a career in this fascinating and often turbulent field of election law. So we've gone like really deep into the weeds of Purcell v. Gonzalez, exploring its origins, its evolution, and its impact on our election system. But for those of our listeners who are thinking, hey, maybe election law is my thing.
Yeah.
What are the key takeaways from this case? What does Purcell like teach us about navigating this complex and often contentious field?
Well, first and foremost, Purcell highlights that election law is not for the faint of heart. It's a dynamic field, constantly evolving, often in response to like unexpected challenges, like say a global pandemic.
Oh yeah.
And as we've seen, timing is absolutely crucial. Election law cases frequently operate on extremely tight deadlines. So being able to think on your feet and work efficiently under pressure is a must.
So no procrastinating in this field. Sounds like election lawyers need to be masters of organization and quick thinking. What else should like aspiring election law gurus keep in mind?
Another key lesson from Purcell is that you need to be comfortable with complex factual scenarios and be ready to like dive deep into the data.
Okay.
We're talking about issues like voter registration, ballot access, and the potential for disenfranchisement. These are complicated matters that require a meticulous approach to evidence gathering and analysis.
It's almost like election lawyers need to be part legal scholar, part data detective.
Exactly. You need to be able to connect the legal dots while also understanding the real-world implications of election rules and how they play out on the ground. And of course, strong writing and oral advocacy skills are absolutely essential, as many of these cases end up being argued in court.
Right, because at the end of the day, you have to be able to persuade a judge or a panel of judges that your interpretation of the law is the right one and that your client's rights are being violated.
Precisely. But beyond those core legal skills, there are some unique challenges and rewards that come with working in the election law arena.
Okay, lay it on us.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that make this area of law particularly demanding or particularly fulfilling?
One of the biggest challenges is that election law is inherently political. It's often at the heart of partisan battles, with both sides fighting tooth and nail to advance their interests. As an election lawyer, you need to be able to navigate those choppy waters while maintaining your professional integrity and commitment to the rule of law.
Sounds like it takes a certain level of diplomacy and thick skin to thrive in that kind of environment. But I imagine there's also a deep sense of satisfaction that comes with doing this kind of work.
Absolutely. You're dealing with issues that go to the very core of our democracy, ensuring that everyone has a voice, that elections are fair and accessible, and that the system works as it should. It's challenging work, but it's also incredibly meaningful.
I can see why someone would be drawn to that. So for those law students out there who are intrigued by election law, what are some practical steps they can take to explore this field?
There are so many ways to get involved: volunteering for campaigns, interning with organizations focused on voting rights, even participating in election protection efforts. These are all great ways to gain hands-on experience and start building your network.
Those are great ideas. It's never too early to start making connections and learning the ropes. And for those of us who aren't aspiring lawyers but still want to engage in this crucial aspect of our democracy, what advice would you give?
For everyone, lawyer or not, understanding cases like Purcell is key to being an informed citizen. Pay attention to election law news. Participate in discussions about voting rights and make your voice heard on these issues. Our democracy depends on active and engaged citizens.
Couldn't agree more. Every vote matters, and understanding the rules of the game is essential for shaping the future of our country. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Purcell v. Gonzalez, I hope you've come away with a deeper understanding of this landmark case and how it continues to shape the landscape of election law.
It's been a fascinating journey, and I think Purcell serves as a powerful reminder that the fight for voting rights is ongoing. It requires vigilance, knowledge, and a commitment to ensuring that our democracy lives up to its ideals.
Well said. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Purcell. Until next time, stay curious, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay informed.